What's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting as Donald Trump prepares for his first visit to the White House Thursday as president-elect. Thousands of people are protesting his victory with marches in several large cities Wednesday night.
Donald Trump, go away! Racist, sexist, anti-gay! Donald Trump, go away! Racist, sexist, anti-gay! Go away! Racist, sexist, anti-gay! Donald Trump, go away!
Many of the protesters say they are upset because of statements Trump made during his presidential campaign. No one from the Trump staff has commented on the protest, but losing Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton has told voters they owe Trump an open mind and a chance to lead.
We have seen that our nation is more deeply divided than we thought. But I still believe in America, and I always will. And if you do, then we must accept this result and then look to the future. Donald Trump is going to be our president. We owe him an open mind and the chance to lead.
Trump will meet with President Barack Obama Thursday to begin the gradual transfer of power so that Trump is ready to be sworn in on January the 20th. Obama said he is rooting for Trump's success and has ordered the White House team to work hard as they can to make sure that this is a successful transition for the president-elect. Despite winning the U.S. presidential election, Donald Trump appears to be losing the popular vote. As voting counting continued across the country, Hillary Clinton held a narrow lead in the popular vote, according to unofficial results tallied by the Associated Press. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. European Council President Donald Tusk says the election of Donald Trump has brought uncertainty and poses new challenges for transatlantic ties. European foreign ministers will hold a special meeting on Sunday to assess the election. Many world leaders congratulated Trump Wednesday, including Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
You are a great friend of Israel. Over the years, you've expressed your support consistently, and I deeply appreciate it. I look forward to working with you to advance security, prosperity, and peace.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel hopes to meet with Trump before the G7 meeting in Italy in May. Mexico's president also plans to meet with Trump. The Mexican government says it is ready to lobby the U.S. Congress to block Trump's plan to impound remittances to pay for a new border wall. Haiti has launched a massive cholera vaccination program in parts of the country that was devastated by Hurricane Matthew. The campaign is expected to be the world's largest, targeting 820,000 people. Haiti has battled a cholera outbreak since 2010, when the bacteria was imported into the country by a contingent of United Nations peacekeepers. Ghana's Electoral Commission has qualified 7 presidential candidates for the national election on December the 7th. The successful candidates, 6 representing political parties and 1 independent, took part in a drawing late Wednesday in the capital, Accra, to determine their positions on the ballot. Despite some complaints about alleged bias by the Electoral Commission, a spokesman says everything is on course for next month's election. Pakistan officials said on Wednesday that an Afghan woman known for her famous National Geographic magazine cover was deported to her native country with her 4 children. The green-eyed Afghan girl, Shabat Gula, who became a symbol of her country's war because of a 1985 cover on the magazine, was found guilty on charges of using fraudulent identity papers. For many years, Gula was an unnamed figure that was immortalized after her photo was featured on National Geographic and became the symbol of Afghanistan's suffering during the 1980s Soviet occupation and the U.S.-backed Mujahideen insurgency against it. U.S. military officials say 2 Marine fighter jets on a training mission collided over the Pacific Ocean near San Diego Wednesday. One pilot was able to land nearby, the other ejected safely. Both are said to be in stable condition. The cause of the collision is under investigation. I'm Michael Brown, reporting in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
America. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 10th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump meets with President Barack Obama at the White House today, Thursday.
So I have instructed my team to follow the example that President Bush's team set 8 years ago and work as hard as we can to make sure that this is a successful transition for the president-elect.
That's U.S. President Barack Obama speaking Wednesday in Washington. World leaders react and contemplate how they will deal with a president-elect Trump. The African diaspora hopes President-elect Trump will build an inclusive America. A university professor compares the U.S. election results to recent provincial and municipal elections in South Africa. And Ghana's Electoral Commission approved 7 candidates for that country's December presidential election.
Out of the 10 candidates who resubmitted their nomination papers for reconsideration, 3 have successfully gone through the process, bringing the total number of candidates for the presidential election to 7.
Iris Apasu, a spokesman for Ghana's Electoral Commission, and scientists achieve a functional cure for HIV in monkey model. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. After a campaign that lasted well over a year, the American people finally got to pick their president. The person they chose was Donald J. Trump, arguably the person least likely to win when the campaign began a year ago. The campaign was divisive and ugly, but the day after the results, the message was, it's time to come together, viewers Kevin Enoch reports.
Ladies and gentlemen, the next president of the United States, Donald Trump!
After a bruising and bitter campaign battle, the American people defied the polls and the status quo on Tuesday to elect Donald Trump president of the United States.
We have a great economic plan. We will double our growth and have the strongest economy anywhere in the world. At the same time, we will get along with all other nations willing to get along with us.
Hillary Rodham Clinton conceded the race to Donald Trump in a phone call early Wednesday, but waited until morning to give her formal concession speech.
We have seen that our nation is more deeply divided than we thought. But I still believe in America, and I always will. And if you do, then we must accept this result and then look to the future. Donald Trump is going to be our president. We owe him an open mind and the chance to lead. Our constitutional democracy enshrines the peaceful transfer of power. And we don't just respect that, we cherish it.
President Obama also urged Americans to come together.
So I have instructed my team to follow the example that President Bush's team set 8 years ago and work as hard as we can to make sure that this is a successful transition for the president-elect. Because we are now all rooting for his success in uniting and leading the country.
The world's global money markets, despite heading down initially, shrugged off the Trump win and have been up most of the day. International reaction was mixed. Mexico, America's southern neighbor, promised to avoid what it called premature reactions to a Trump presidency, while far-right nationalists like France's Marine Le Pen called it a victory for the free American people. Trump will enter the White House in a good position, and Republican leaders like House Speaker Paul Ryan urged party unity now that Trump's win gives the party control of the presidency and the U.S. House and Senate. Among the things Trump has promised to do in his first 100 days, repeal and replace Obamacare, build a wall at the Mexican border, and appoint the newest member of the Supreme Court.
That's viewers Kevin Enoch reporting. People across the globe woke up to a very different world yesterday morning to news that American voters had elected Donald Trump as the next U.S. president. It is being called the Earth's most watched election since World War II, the results of which are expected to completely transform American policy and America's position in the world. VOA Europe correspondent Luis Ramirez reports from London.
For Londoners, the shock news smacked of that morning back in June when they learned, despite poll predictions, that Britain had voted to leave the European Union. A leap into the unknown is how leaders across the world and the market see it. The dollar dipped in early trading, given Donald Trump's comments during the campaign that he will tear up trade agreements and offer no guarantees to members of NATO who do not pay their share.
What they see now is one candidate who seems to stand for a completely different view of America's role in the world. And I mean completely different, who repudiates rather specifically the alliance framework, the NATO framework in particular, who has repudiated America's commitment to the liberal trade system that America created, the sort of open globalization America promoted, that seems to be in some ways more sympathetic to America's historic enemies like Russia than it is to Europe.
China has reason to worry. Trump has targeted Beijing's trade practices, threatening to slap 45% tariffs on Chinese imports.
There's a whole range of sort of relatively outlandish statements that Trump said during his campaign that if they were to come to pass could create some pretty dramatic business and economic consequences in the region.
Trump won on an America First platform. For Africa, analysts say that means expectations are realistic and tempered.
I think that what Africa has to do is to prepare for the worst case scenario, which would mean that the America under Donald Trump would focus first on American national interests and not necessarily on global interests and not necessarily, therefore, on African interests. And if there was a time that Africa should start thinking of African solutions to African problems, the time is now.
World leaders watched this election closely, and the big question now is, what role will the U.S. play in the world?
Is the U.S. going to disengage from the world? And we've seen a fair amount of disengagement from the U.S. in the last few years. And what's happening in Syria is partly a result of that. Is the U.S. going to disengage, or is the U.S. going to re-engage with the world?
Trump said his administration will deal fairly with the world and seek common ground, not hostility. With the uncertainty of a new day also comes the hope that a dramatic departure from the established world order could bring new opportunities and maybe some positive surprises. Luis Ramirez, VOA News, London.
A member of the African diaspora in the United States says although the diaspora had hoped for a Hillary Clinton to win the U.S. election, he is calling on the African diaspora to accept the results as part of the democratic process where there is always a loser and a winner. Sylvester Okere, president and CEO of the United People for African Congress, says the African diaspora is still trying to come to terms with what he called the unbelievable results. But Okere says the African diaspora hopes President-elect Trump will build an inclusive government despite his anti-immigrant rhetoric during the campaign.
I will tell you, it's a complete shock to everybody, including myself. It was unbelievable, unexpected. I wouldn't say unexpected, but very unbelievable. You know, considering all Donald Trump has said and done, no one ever expected this kind of victory. I will call it heat. But it is what it is. It's democracy. It's election. One will win or lose. I tweeted last night that it doesn't matter whether you win or lose, but how you play the game. And I think Secretary Clinton consistently played a very clear and enduring game. She is a real woman, a leader. I applaud for her. If she want to run again, I will give her my all unconditionally.
You have also congratulated the new president-elect. What are you looking forward to?
Well, first of all, like I said, after election, I believe in giving adequate support to the winner. It's about the interest of the community. It's not about the leader. What I'm looking for is a united community and inclusion, which is what we're fighting for. Thank God the Democratic Party has always been a party that welcomed us. Governor Dofar Patrick always said this to me. He said, look, I am a Democrat because I believe in American dream for all. So Democratic Party have been given that open hand or platform for us. So we still want the new administration that will be inclusive, so that nobody feels isolated, regardless of where they come from, what they believe in, whether they campaign for him or not. So I sent that congratulatory message to him to let him know that Africans were still in this community. Out of the 3 million estimated, or more than that, Africans, doesn't mean that everyone is a Democrat, but at least we know Democratic Party has up to 85% of it. And his kind of campaign sways everyone that could have been independent or the Republican to be on the Democratic Party. He's the cause of it. But now we want to work with him for the interests of the entire community.
As you know, even Secretary Clinton, you know, in her concession speech, also asked Americans to give the new president-elect a chance. President Obama will be meeting with Mr. Trump on Thursday. So, because this is about a peaceful transfer of power, what lesson do you think Africa can draw from this type of transition?
We need to learn a lot here. When President Obama won the election, he invited Mitt Romney. 2008, he met Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State. We need to start emulating that. Today, the president congratulated Donald Trump, invited him. Very rare you see Africans doing that, and we have to grow up. This is democracy. There is a lot to learn there. You know, back in Africa, remember recent election in Nigeria, some people call it do or die. You don't have to call it do or die. It's democracy. If you win, fine. If you don't, you have a handshake and continue to fight for what you believe and for your community. Abraham Lincoln ran 7 good times before he became a president. But in Africa, if they don't win, they kill. And those that win will victimize and bully and ostracize people. It's not that way. That means the intention is not to lead, but to be tyrant in the name of democracy. So Africa has a lot to learn in this.
Sylvester Okere is president and CEO of the United People for African Congress. He was speaking with me from Washington, D.C. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. Today is Thursday, November 10th. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is 17 and a half minutes past the hour. Many Africans were surprised by Donald Trump's victory in the U.S. presidential election, especially since opinion polls have shown Hillary Clinton with a steady but modest lead over the New York billionaire. John Strimlaw is a professor of international relations at the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg, South Africa. He told reporter William Eagle that in recent provincial and municipal elections, South Africans also surprised longtime governing elites when they rejected and replaced them with opposition politicians.
We just had here in South Africa in August local elections, which were a shocker to the ANC, because they went for the opposition. Now, that was because service delivery at the local level was inadequate. The voters in the rural America and the Rust Belt who are so alienated from Washington, as is a majority of Americans, it appears, from the now dubious opinion polling, that kind of being alienated from your capital leads to an easy rejectionist vote of the status quo and a vote for change. And that's something that the national elected officials in this country are struggling to understand. But there is a parliamentary system here in place that allows for minority parties and a lot more perhaps resilience and adaptability to demands locally expressed. And it's a smaller country. The U.S. is really very, very large, and the federal system prevents that kind of thing, except among legislatures. And the paradox of American democracy is the voters keep sending the same representatives and senators back to Washington time and time again because there's somebody they know and they feel they can get their appeals voiced to at least, even if not always, their satisfaction. So somehow this rejection of the president or the incumbency, that is to say the Democrats or Hillary Clinton, was expressed at a one-off thing like the Brexit votes.
Is it surprising to Africans or to yourself that the U.S. system could put forward as the two major candidates two people with very high negatives in terms of public opinion polls?
Here I try to say to South Africans, look, there was a constitutional bargain in 1789. It's had some historic legacy effects on the possibility for reforming and making the country more of a modern democracy, and that therefore there are a lot of rigidities built into it that produce a situation which I can explain in highly particularistic terms, how we got the weak candidate array and how Trump was able to leverage his public personality as a reality TV star into a constituency strong enough to at least get him elected president. Whether they'll keep him as president and whether he can govern effectively are a whole set of untested propositions because he's had no experience. And Hillary Clinton, on the other hand, it's hard to mobilize the $2 billion necessary for a campaign. And there is a momentum that goes for having run once before in both parties. And she was able to capitalize on that. It is not a recommendation for fledgling democracies to follow. They need to have a more supple and responsive and, I think, proportionally representative governments to adapt to the changes and pressures confronting them. And they have to do this with their partners in the region. This is a big and complicated argument, but I don't want to rule out the only alternative government that really is sustainable for peace and development, which is democracy. But it's under a lot of strain in Africa and now in the United States and in Europe.
That was Professor John Strimlaw of the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg, South Africa. He spoke with reporter William Eagle. Seven presidential candidates have qualified to participate in the December 7th Ghanaian presidential election, according to the Electoral Commission. The commission had previously disqualified several presidential candidates for failing to meet requirements stipulated by the body, but some of the parties challenged their disqualification in court. The court subsequently ordered the Electoral Commission to allow the disqualified candidates time to correct their mistakes on the presidential nomination documents. Eric Zapatsu, spokesman for the Electoral Commission, tells viewers Peter Clotty it is unlikely any more of the candidates will be reconsidered.
After we received the nomination the last time, some candidates whose nominations were not received went to the High Court. They were given a ruling which ordered the Electoral Commission to reconsider their nomination papers and then determine whether they are qualified to be on the ballot. Then the Commission went further to the Supreme Court to turn down the decision of the High Court. So it was last Friday that the Supreme Court ruled that the Commission should give a hearing to all the candidates whose nominations were not received to give them the opportunity to correct the anomalies on their ballot paper, after which the Commission would determine the number of such candidates who should take part in the presidential election. That exercise came to an end just this evening, and out of the 10 candidates who resubmitted their nomination papers for reconsideration, three have successfully gone through the process, bringing the total number of candidates for the presidential election to seven. Just this evening, balloting was done, and all the seven candidates now have their positions on the ballot paper for the election.
So this is the final list of seven or six political party presidential candidates and one independent candidate. Wouldn't those that have been disqualified for a second time have an opportunity anymore ahead of the election?
No, Peter. Now we have the final list of seven candidates made up of six party candidates and one independent. And I think the door is not shut. Those other candidates, I'm not too sure, would have any opportunity to be on the ballot because they have resubmitted their nomination papers and they have not met the requirements to be passed as candidates for the election. So as we speak, we now have seven candidates contesting the presidential elections in Ghana come December 2016.
So with all these legal challenges that were mounted for those presidential candidates who were initially disqualified, hasn't this taken away the time of the Electoral Commission to prepare adequately for the general election?
No, Peter, everything has been on course. Injunctions were placed somewhere along the line on the processes leading to the presidential. But having gone to the Supreme Court, all the proceedings in the High Court have been held on. And while the injunction was placed on the presidential, all activities for the election, all the preparations were ongoing. As we speak, I think we are in the final stages of printing the parliamentary ballot. So all that is left for the commission to do is to print the notice of poll for the presidential and then print the ballot papers. And come 7th December, we are ready to deliver an election.
When will the printing of the presidential ballot papers begin? And do you think you will be able to meet the deadline to be adequately prepared? Because most concentration of Ghanaians are on the presidential election, although the legislative and the local elections are also quite important.
Rightly so. The focus, attention, and interest of Ghanaians are much more in the presidential than the parliamentary, and that makes the presidential, the stakes there, much more higher. But having said that, you know, printing the parliamentary presidential notices of poll and ballot is much, much more easier than handling the parliamentary. Why do I say so? When we take the parliamentary, we are talking about 275 constituencies, and each constituency has a different permutation of parties and candidates contested. So if you must print the parliamentary ballot, what it means is that you need to develop a template for 275 constituencies. But when it comes to the presidential, the whole country is one constituency with seven candidates contesting the election. So you develop one template and you can print the ballot papers for the presidential. And we've had the assurance from the printers that given the time that is left, all can be done within no time where we can have the ballots ready for the election.
Eric Zapasu is the spokesman for the Electoral Commission of Ghana. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Accra. U.S. scientists have devised a way to put the virus that causes AIDS into remission. It's not a cure per se, but could someday offer to HIV patients years of life without drugs. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
Scientists are calling it a functional cure. An experimental treatment regimen is being developed that could offer HIV-positive people something similar to a cure so that they wouldn't have to take antiretroviral drugs every day to manage their disease. Scientists are reporting in the journal Nature that they achieved remission in non-human primates infected with a monkey version of HIV using a combination of a vaccine and a drug. An HIV-positive person who takes antiretroviral drugs is simply suppressing the AIDS virus to undetectable levels, meaning the virus is not really gone. It is dormant in immune system cells, ready to spring to life the moment someone stops taking their medication. A functional cure might be achieved by using a drug to chase out the latent virus. In a 1-2 punch, the virus would then be killed by the immune system, which has been stimulated by a vaccine to target the HIV. Nelson Michael, who directs the HIV research program at Walter Reed Army Institute of Research in Maryland, says that could be a game changer in the battle against the AIDS virus.
This is where we're beginning to edge into that space. And we're basically developing the rationale that we can actually envision a day that will be what happens. That someone would not have to take drugs every day because these other things that we can do would buy them a lot of time where they wouldn't have to take drugs. That's really the story.
In a 2-year-long study, Michael and his colleague Dan Baruch, the director of vaccine research at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston, gave a group of 36 rhesus monkeys that were on antiretroviral drugs, either a vaccine alone, a drug called TLR7, or a combination of the two agents. The monkeys that got the vaccine alone saw a tenfold drop in their viral load, while Michael says the animals on the TLR7 saw no improvement. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Feelings about Donald Trump's U.S. election win are mixed in Africa. In Kenya, where President Barack Obama has familiar roots, many were hoping Hillary Clinton could carry on his legacy, but were prepared for disappointment. And that's it for this Thursday, November 10th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing every one of you in Africa a very good day.
Next on Let's Talk, flowers. Do you believe that they are a symbol of beauty? Join host Sunday Shomari and his guests discussing flowers. Let's Talk comes to you on Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll examine Beyond the Storm, treating the powerless and the powerful in Mobutu's Congo Zaire, a book written by Dr. William Close and Dr. Matudila Malonga, a Congolese physician who co-discovered Ebola in 1976. We'll also discuss the latest developments in the Democratic Republic of Congo on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.